This is Pardes from Jerusalem, the weekly Parsha podcast from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit www.elmad.pardes.org. In this week's episode, Rabbi Alex Israel discusses Parashat Bereshit.
This week we excitedly reopen the Torah from the beginning as we begin a new cycle of reading Parashat Shavua, the weekly portion. We start with Bereshit. We've just finished the end of Deuteronomy, Devarim, and now we begin again from the start. And we open the pages and we see the world spring to life, the creation, from let there be light to the separation of the waters and the creation of the heavens. And the world as it's covered with vegetation and then animal life and then human life and ending with Shabbat. The refrain of chapter 1 is the beautiful phrase where it says, Vayar Elokim Kitov, and God saw that it was good. We read through stage by stage and we hear, and it was good, and it was good, and at the end it was very good. And we too are convinced that the world which is created is full of tov, it is full of good, it is an optimistic world, the world can succeed. How surprising then that when we look at the closing verses at the end of the parasha, we see in chapter 6 the opposite, that man has become corrupt and that the world has become unhealable. It has become so evil. The word instead of tov is ra. Vayar Hashem ki rabba ra'at ha'adam ba'aretz v'chol yetzer machshavot libo rak ra kol hayom. And God saw that great was the evil of man, rabba ra'at ha'adam, in the land, and all the inclination of his heart was only bad, evil, all day. The tov, the good, has turned to ra, turned to evil, and God decides to destroy the world in the very last verses of our weekly Torah reading this week. In that sense, we could characterize Parashat Bereshit as, if I may use the phrase of Nechama Leibovitz, as a tale of the decline of man. Man starts off so innocent, so perfect, in various incremental stages, takes himself or herself downwards in a downward spiral until the world must be destroyed. And this happens through several stories. This is the tale of Parashat Bereshit. If chapter 1 and 2 are the creation, then chapter 3 is the first sin, a sin which is a rebellion against God, the eating of the fruit of a tree, a stage of rebellion, eating something they were told not to do, maybe man and woman, discovering that they can do just what they please. Chapter 4 takes us to the first murder. Chapter 5 describes the expansion of mankind to a situation in which they cover the world. And chapter 6 tells us of a violent society, that the whole of society has become corrupt to a point that it cannot be improved. And God, as we will read in next week's parasha, Parashat Noach, brings a flood against civilization to restart the world. So in many ways, what opens with such optimism turns to pessimism. It's quite a tale. I would like to focus in on one of those stages, on one of those pivotal sins which are described in Parashat Bereshit. And we're going to turn to chapter 4, the story of Cain and Abel, a very famous story. And even before we turn to reading the text, and I am going to read the text in a minute, I'm going to ask what maybe is the first question that we need to ask, and then we'll ask a second one in a minute. The first question, of course, is, why did Cain kill Abel? Why would one brother rise up against another and murder him? There, of course, is a second question, but let's read the text first. Chapter 4, verse 1. V'ha'adam yada et chava ishto, v'tar v'teler et Cain, v'tomer kaniti ish et Hashem. Adam was intimate with his wife Eve, and she conceived and gave birth to Cain, and she said, I have acquired a man with God. Vatosef laledet et achiv et hevel. She also bore his brother, Abel. Vayhi hevel roi tzon v'kayin haya oved adamah. Abel was a shepherd, and Cain was a worker of the ground. And it was after some time that Cain brought from the fruit of the ground as an offering to the Lord. Abel too brought from the firstborn of his sheep and from their fat. The Lord accepted Abel and his offering, but he did not accept Cain and his offering. Vayisha Hashem el Hevel ve'el minchato, ve'el Cain ve'el minchato lo sha'a. Vayichar le'Cain ma'od vayiplu panav. Cain was exceedingly upset and his face fell. I think maybe we'll stop at this point and we'll think about the story, because, of course, the question is this, the second question is this. Why did God accept Abel's sacrifice, but he did not accept Cain's? If we might talk to Cain after the murder, we'll ask him, why did you do it? He might say, well, I was jealous of my brother. There was tension, of course. Why did God accept Abel's sacrifice and not Cain? So maybe we need to start with that question and ask, why indeed? Who were these two brothers? What was the difference between them? And why did God receive Abel's sacrifice so warmly and rejected Cain's? And I want to, we're going to offer a couple of different readings. The first, maybe we'll start off with a reading of Rashi. Rashi, who we frequently start with, the 11th century commentator who is the first word in commentary. And the way Rashi reads the story, he says that Abel was much more religiously aware. Let's put it this way. He says, why was Abel a shepherd, whereas Cain was a farmer? He was a shepherd of flocks, says Rashi, lefi shenit kalalah adama. Since the ground was cursed, Abel decided not to work it and to go into sheep farming. In other words, he's aware of God's curse and he keeps away from the land. Cain apparently is oblivious to this. On a second point, which might explain why Abel's sacrifice was accepted, he notices that in the text there are three phrases which explain why Abel's sacrifice was superior to Cain's. Cain brought me pri ha'adama, from the fruits of the ground, but Abel brought from his firstborns of his sheep and from their fat. Abel brings the firstborns of his sheep, he knows they're his, and he gives from him, and the fat of the animals. And now we look back at Cain and realize he gave me pri ha'adama. Rashi accentuates this and says he brought the inferior fruits, the fruits which he couldn't sell in the market. In other words, Abel seems to be somebody who has a God awareness. He keeps away from working the land, and therefore, and he brings a sacrifice which is of the highest pedigree of his animals, whereas Cain seems to, you know, bring a sacrifice just because he has to. He brings second-rate produce. And that would explain why Abel is preferred to Cain. This is one direction that we could take in the text. A second direction wants to look at the source of their difference and the source of God's displeasure with Cain in their professions. Rabbi Samson Ravel Hirsch says, the worker of the land comes to worship the forces of nature on whose influence the success of the fields he serves is visibly dependent. The agricultural peoples were the first to lose the pure consciousness of God and humanity. There, slavery and polytheism were first begotten. Here, the emphasis is on the fact that a farmer can feel like he is a master. A farmer maybe wants to protect his land and feel that he is a master of the land which he works. Whereas frequently a shepherd is going to be a nomad wandering between societies. I'll say something more. A shepherd has to care for animals. He learns a sensitivity to the animals with whom he works. So therefore, according to this, Samson Raphael Hirsch suggests that a farmer can be led more easily to idolatry, to worshipping forces of nature. The shepherd is more sensitive, and their choices of profession, once again, are reflective of a variance in their religious orientation. And according to this, we're going to look at Abel as the religious one and Cain as something different than that. I'll mention a third approach here before we get to the approach that I really do want to take. And that is to focus on their names. The name Cain comes from the word kinyan, acquisition. In fact, when we see Eve give her firstborn son a name, she says, Kaniti Ishat Hashem, which some say, I have acquired a man from God. According to that, Cain is all about possessiveness. His name is Kinyan. He wants to have, he wants to control, and he doesn't want anybody to get ahead. Abel, his name is Hevel. And we remember that word Hevel, which actually means literally a breath, something which is intangible, ephemeral. From the first line of Kohelet, Hevel Havalim Hakol Havel. Sometimes it's translated as vanity of vanities, all is vanity, but I think we would simply say it's all breath. Hevel means something which is literally a breath. That's what he was. And it could even be that the name Hevel reflects a breath, because that's all Hevel was. He breathed and then he was snuffed out. That was almost his destiny, that he was Hevel. He was here today and gone tomorrow. But let's go back to Cain. Cain is all about Kinyan. And when he doesn't get his way, and when his sacrifice is not accepted, he resorts to violence. Hevel, a person of the spirit, a person of breath, appreciates God. And that's his primary orientation in the world. And all of these interpretations that I have mentioned, all these three, are going to seek Cain as a bad person and Abel as a good person. We frequently like this sort of typecasting in Tanakh, and biblical commentary from the Midrash to modern commentators frequently favor such a reading. But I would like to try and adopt a different reading which sees Cain and Hevel in a more neutral way, and we're going to try and analyze a certain psychological approach to this story. And I'm going to claim that in many ways, Cain and Hevel, Cain and Abel are equally spiritual. And let me explain again. I'll read the first line. Adam was intimate with his wife Eve, and she conceived, and she gave birth to Cain and said, Kaniti Ishat Hashem, I have acquired a man with God. One can certainly read it this way, not I have acquired a man from God, but with God, or I have, maybe even better, created a man with God. Chava, Eve, has a very strong sensibility of religion. She feels God. I have to say that maybe she didn't really, this is the first human being to be born naturally. Maybe she didn't connect the birth of her child with the act of intimacy that she had with Adam all those months earlier. And when the child is born, she says, I have created a man with God. Before, us two human beings, Adam and Eve, were created by God. But now I have become a partner with you, God. This is absolutely wonderful. In fact, her naming expresses the idea that she is religiously oriented. Cain too, if you noticed, who brings the sacrifice first, according to all the explanations that I have brought earlier, well, I would expect Cain not to bring any sort of sacrifice. But if you notice, it says Abel was a shepherd, Cain worked the ground, and at the end of the season or at the end of days, Cain brought from the fruits of the ground as a gift to God. He initiates. Cain is a religious man. He learned it from his mother. And he decided to bring a sacrifice to God. He felt an innate sense that he needs to thank God for the produce of the ground, maybe precisely because the land had been cursed. due to the sin of his father and mother, and now he was able to produce fruit. He praises God and brings a gift to God, which is wonderful. And then it says, and we can go with Rashi, that Abel's sacrifice was superior, that Hevel brought me b'chorot sono michal vehem, but notice it says, v'hevel hevi gamhu. Abel also brought. He got the idea of the sacrifice from Cain. Maybe he one-ups him. He does better than him. He saw that Cain just brought ordinary fruit, so he brought the best of his flocks. But we can hardly see Cain as flawed here. And I think this is the critical thing that happens here. I'd like to say that sometimes life is unfair. I'll go even further. Sometimes God is unfair. The Torah deliberately does not tell us why Cain's sacrifice was not accepted and why Abel's was accepted. We really don't know. And the point, I think, of this whole story is that this is immaterial to the story. We notice what happens the minute the sacrifices are accepted. And by the way, don't ask me how they knew whether the sacrifices are accepted. There are all sorts of different interpretations. Some claim that fire came down from heaven at Abel's and did not consume Cain's. It's possible. Some people want to claim that the fire from Abel's sacrifice went up straight to heaven, but the smoke from Cain's wafted away in the wind or something like that. We don't know, but we know that Cain was very, very cognizant that God was displeased with him, because look at his reaction. It says, "Vayichar leCain ma'od vayiplu panav." Cain was greatly distressed. He was greatly upset, and his face fell. What does it mean, his face fell? I think we can very easily understand when somebody's face falls. We drop our heads when we are ashamed, when we are upset, when we feel that something is deeply wrong. Maybe he was ashamed towards his brother. His younger brother had got ahead. Maybe he was, it says he was upset, but his face fell. Now, why did God do this? We don't really know. But let's look at the next line. The Lord said to Cain, "Why are you upset? And why is your face downcast? Look, if you better yourself, imtetiv, there's that word, tov again. If you make yourself better, se'et, you will be able to carry your face. You will be able to raise your face. Ve'im lotetiv, but if you do not better yourself, lepetach chatat rovetz. Sin crouches at the door. Ve'elechat shukato. And it yearns for you. Ve'atatim sholbo. But you can rule over it." Now this very cryptic verse. Verse 7. It's difficult to understand, but I'll say it very simply the way I understand it. God's saying to him, Cain, you can do better. I didn't accept your sacrifice because I expect more of you. If you are better, you will raise your face. In other words, you will be able to have your sacrifice accepted if you're better. But if you don't better yourself, sin crouches at the door. Eilecha tshukato, you desire it, but you can rule over it. What's he saying? What's Cain feeling? At this moment, Cain is feeling an intense jealousy, an intense upset that his brother's got ahead. Now, he's got two ways of acting. God is saying to him, either you can work on yourself, tetiv, you can become better. Whatever flaw it is that was in you, go search inside yourself and improve. And then you will be able to hold up your face. You will be equal to your brother, if not above him. But if you decide lotetiv, if you decide not to deal with your problems, if you decide not to work on the problem, sin crouches at the door. What is the sin that crouches at the door? Your anger, your frustration. Ve'elechat shukato, it has a warped control over you. You're going to burn yourself up in frustration. It's sitting at the door. You're going to feel, why me? You're going to get consumed by anger or blame of the other. It sits at the door. It eats away at you. Elecha tshukato, it's so easy to give in to all of that fury. But God says, v'ata timsholbo, Cain, you can do it. You can rule over it. What's amazing here is that God almost acts like the psychologist to Cain. If you remember the way he approached him first, he says, "Why are you upset? Why is your face downcast?" And Cain doesn't answer. And then God says to Cain, you can improve, you can work on yourself, you can make this good. It's up to you. But if you decide just to live a life of frustration, then sin crouches at the door. And in the end, you're going to desire it. You can put yourself into a spiral of upset and anger and frustration. Look at the very next line, verse 8. It says, "Vayomer Kail el Hevel Achiv." Cain said to Abel, and it was when they were in the field, and Cain arose over Abel and killed him. This is exactly what God warned him about. God warned him that he had two paths to go, either lahativ, either to be, make himself better, or to let the frustrations and the anger eat him up on the inside. And he, in the end, what does he do? We don't know what the conversation in the field was about, but we know that Cain engaged in an act of premeditated murder. How do we know this? Because it says Cain spoke to his brother Abel. Some of the commentaries say he said, "Let's go out to the field." Others say he started a conversation with him about the sacrifice which was accepted or rejected. But we know Cain initiated a conversation. And when they were on the field, Cain rose against Abel, his brother, and killed him. This is not an act which happened by surprise. This is an action which happened premeditated. Cain chose to dispose of his problems by disposing of his brother. He chose to get rid of his competitor instead of working on himself. He deliberately ignored God. The amazing thing I have to say is that God then still engages this in conversation and says, "Cain, where is your brother?" Waiting for Cain to actually admit it. And Cain says, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Constantly deflecting responsibility. First, he's not willing to take responsibility within himself. And even after the heinous crime that he does, he's not willing to accept responsibility. Let me just go back. There's much more to say about this chapter, but our time is getting short, and I'd like to just reflect again on the methodology that I've taken. Some commentators, the first three approaches that I gave, want to typecast Cain as an evil man, as a person riddled with some sort of idolatry, possessiveness, lack of spirituality, and see Abel as the religious one. And that's very convenient, because then, of course, Cain is bad from the beginning. He's full of kinyan, full of the wanting to acquire and control. And Abel is the Hevel, he is the spiritual one. But the way I've tried to read it is like this. Cain is also spiritual, just like Abel. And these are two ordinary people. But what happens in life when life doesn't go our way? What happens when life seems dreadfully unfair, even in a random way? What happens when somebody else gets the job, or somebody else gets ahead, or somebody else is more beautiful, or somebody else is more wealthy? And then I just say, this is just not fair. How can it be? Now we have two ways in which to grapple with the situation. We can work harder on ourselves, and that's what God was trying to say to Cain. If you push yourself ahead, if you tative, if you act in a better way, you will be able to raise your face. But if you do not, sin crouches at the door. There are all sorts of excuses you will make, which will lead you in a negative direction. Cain decides not to take heed of God's fine advice, and instead, as the anger burns within him, the only way he can find to regain, to retain his dignity, is by disposing of his competitor, engaging in the first murder, where instead of working on himself, he murders and buries the source of his distress. And this is the beginning of the violent society that eventually leads to the destruction of the world in the flood, where there we read Vatimalei ha'aretz chamas. The land was full of lawlessness. Vayara elokim et ha'aretz ki hinei nishchata. God saw that the world was destroyed. Ki yishchit kol basar et darko al ha'aretz. Because humankind had destroyed its ways. When the way that we decide to deal with our problems is by lashing out and by blaming everybody around us, this is a sure recipe that society will spiral downwards. I think the lessons are quite obvious. As we've just emerged from the holiday season is a time which starts with Yom Kippur, with Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And before we get to the festival of Sukkot, we try to cleanse ourselves and we try to actually turn inwards to ourselves and say, even before we celebrate, what we need to do is take a good look at ourselves and make sure that we are working on our inner lives. And this is exactly what Cain was asked to do. If we want to solve our problems, if we want to raise our faces, if we want to raise our fate, then it is we who have to take a look inside ourselves and ask, what can I do instead of always blaming the other person? I wish everybody Shabbat Shalom, a very wonderful Shabbat. It's been a pleasure learning with you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Pardes from Jerusalem, the weekly Parsha podcast from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit www.almad.pardes.org.